Well, thank you to the organizers of the Simons collaboration for the invitation to give a talk here at this meeting. And the topic of my lecture has some common theme, addressing objects in G2 holonomy background that also include what we call fluxes. Well, to study motivation, why we deal with M-theory on special holonomy spaces, I don't think that's the place to explain this motivation here. But in particular, if you want solutions of M-theory that correspond to three or four dimensional space times with n equal one supersymmetry, we have to put seven or eight extra dimensional special holonomy spaces with G2 or spin 7 holonomy, respectively. We can look at M theory in two particular limits. One limit would be viewing this theory as a classical gravitational background. Actually, what we refer to as 11-dimensional supergravity. And taking such a classical gravitational background, we put extra seven or eight dimensions on special holonomy spaces. But what I also want to do in this context is turning on another classical field in 11-dimensional supergravity, which is a three-form field whose field strength is four-form flux. In the context of supergravity theories, we typically want to deal with smooth solutions. And so in this domain, we are aiming at reaching description of classical gravitational background with those fluxes in a certain a smooth description of those spacetimes and fluxes. So what I want to just briefly highlight is that in this context, what we typically deal with is such classical solutions that involve extended sub-objects that are supported by those fluxes, like M2 brains or M5 brains. But I will highlight another somewhat puzzling observation of another type of brain that I'm going to call M3 brain. The other direction that we want to go in M-theory description is describing gauge degrees of freedom. At the end, we do believe that compactification of this theory will have to do something with particle physics of our four-dimensional world, maybe even describe degrees of freedom that have features of the standard model of particle physics. Well, in this context, to address non-abelian gauge degrees of freedom, we have to deal with 11-dimensional spaces that are put on special holonomy spaces that have now singularities. And the necessary condition to obtain non-abelian gauge degrees of freedom in four or three dimensions is to deal with singularities in the special holonomy spaces that are of codimension 4. The way we address the features of these degrees of freedom is going away from classical space-time description and describe those degrees of freedom on the singular codimension 4 surfaces in terms of what we refer to as Hitchin-type systems. So in this context, again, what I want to deal with is add not just non-trivial deformations associated with a Higgs field that parameterizes fluctuations in directions transfers to this codimension 4 singularities, but also add background gauge fields that I'm referring to here as Hitchin flux. This type of fluxes that we are putting in the context of Hitchin-type systems, I would like to refer to, again, as T brain type configurations, to borrow this word from related studies in the context of F-theory. One motivation why we are dealing with this here, by adding fluxes, non-trivial, for the backgrounds of these heating systems, is to actually not only address gauge degrees of freedom, like gauge bosons, but also to address chiral matter degrees of freedom that could appear in these backgrounds. Namely, they would be associated with identifying localized matter modes in the Hitchin systems. Any questions? Well, and hopefully I will cover those two key topics and then finish with some summary and outlook. Now, as far as the background goes, in the first part, when we are carrying ahead of classical gravity backgrounds, that's actually a program that on special holonomy spaces like G2 and spin-7 is actually a program that I have worked on quite a while ago, and it focused on constructing actually regular non-compact special holonomy spaces that at the end in terms of constructions ended up being asymptotically locally conical cohomogeneity one spaces. And further studies in this context involve putting fluxes in the supergravity background and see what kind of now curved spacetime and fluxes we obtain in the context of taking the extra dimensions to be associated with this special holonomy non-compact spaces. Actually, a useful thing, I'm not saying it's useful enough for physicists, and it's quite old, but it sort of has a summary of things at the time and motivations for putting membranes in this context. So what I want to say here in this context is some work in progress, few interesting observations that may have to do with some new features uncovering in the context of supergravity limit of M-theory. The second part that I highlighted in the outline is to address gauge degrees of freedom in the Hitchin time systems, and in particular, hopefully identifying the localized modes that would be describing for us chiral matter in this context, namely the study now of more general T-brain type configuration. Turns out to be a major project at Penn that involves math student, now already doctor, Rodrigo Barbosa, two postdocs, Craig Lurie, and Gianluca Zoccarata, a student, Ethan Torres, Jonathan Heckman, and myself. And originally I put 1905 here, the date of the appearance of this work, but I think we are optimistic. All it right. Should happen this year, this month. This one, no. In any case, let me now proceed with this outline and just highlight things on the supergravity side and the approaches that we take there with special holonomy spaces and adding to now this 11-dimensional supergravity, also turning on non-trivium flux. So the prototype example that one writes is a prototype example when we start with extra dimensions to be associated with spin 7, eight-dimensional special holonomy space. And then what's left is three Minkowski directions, 1, 2. And that would be perfect so that without any fluxes, that would satisfy equations of motions. But what we want to do now is turn this four-form field strength that is there in the bosonic sector of supergravity theory and turning on this four-form flux with non-trivial function H will in turn modify our metric, namely it would introduce those non-trivial Wolf factors that depend on the flux that we turn on. Equations of motion in 11 dimensions of supergravity would tell us that we can solve with this ansatz all the equations of motion by satisfying this function h to be harmonic function in the transverse a-dimensional space. So a number of years ago, that was an important motivation to actually study different M2 brains. They're also analogous brains, M5 brains in M-theory, but then we can go to type 2A effective supergravity theory, type 2B, and so there are all kinds of brains that we can address as supergravity solution in this context of a-dimensional transverse space that led actually to developing further work to find new explicit metrics of spin 7 holonomy that correspond to non-compact cohomogeneity 1 spaces, and as a byproduct beyond the original famous work by Brian Solomon, 1 discovered actually analytic examples of such non-compact cohomogeneity 1 spin 7 metrics that turn out to asymptotically describe not asymptotically conical spaces, but what we dubbed asymptotically locally conical spaces. One has made progress by formulating different classes of such asymptotic local conical metrics, and the recent work prominently displayed in this collaboration actually formalized and proved the existence of these spaces and generalized that to an infinite tower of possibilities. So that is quite a fruitful direction, motivated in some sense from supergravity perspective. Okay. Now, what I want to also mention in this context is that when we have four-form flux in M theory, we can also turn on a flux, a four-form flux that lives completely in the internal space, in the internal, namely transfer space. So those are harmonic cell-dual four-forms living in the spin 7 metric. And if one can construct those, and one can, actually, for all these examples, one can construct explicit cell-dual four-form metrics, four-form flux, harmonic cell-dual four-forms that support now this four-form flux. And with the presence of those fluxes, additional fluxes supported by these cell-dual four-forms, the equation for the harmonic function H gets modified. It becomes regular now because this four-form is actually now in these equations smooth out the behavior of the original harmonic function that became singular in the origin of the construction. That phenomenon actually had an important implication in the studies of dual field theories in the context of ADS-CFT correspondence. Actually, it started in type 2B supergravity and goes under the name of Klebanov-Strassler mechanism. In our program, we actually generalize those things to examples like that. And in M-theory and all kinds of other examples, which involve really constructing additional harmonic forums on special holonomy spaces. And this particular example of spin 7 ones. The outcome is that supergravity solution in this context is now completely regular. In the interior, these extra harmonic forums render the solution completely irregular in the origin, and that has important implications for studying dual behavior of field theories in the interior, which we call low energy infrared regime of dual field theories, and their regularity tells us the regularity of the corresponding gravitational solution tells us important properties about the corresponding field theory in the infrared regime of the via ADS-CFT correspondence. This is just some physics words trying to motivate why it was of interest not only construct this special holonomy metrics not only that, but also dealing with special harmonic forms on them. This is prototype that I'm choosing, yes. So this would correspond, you know, the way ADS4 appears, this coordinate inhomogeneity 1 combines together with this space into ADS4, and then that's relationship. Oh, no, yeah, of course they are. Let me not go, I just prototype to give you the sense and motivate. Really spin 7 and G2 only. Right? There are all kinds of stories about Calabi-Yau's and type 2A, type 2B, all kinds of heterotic string theory description in the supergravity limit. In any case, let me just, since I'm going on too long with this story, but let me sort of highlight also the topic of sort of a curious example, all right, in M theory, where we would build a space, and that's coming to Marty's point, I want to build a space that I would have four-dimensional Minkowski space, right? That would correspond, as if I have no fluxes, that would correspond in the transverse direction, right, to G2 holonomy space. Right? So what we dared to do a long time ago is turn on the flux by keeping flat space to be four-dimensional Minkowski space. Right. So I'm turning on the flux, and I'm using I would use the symmetry associated with the original G2 holonomy space, and here I chose an example of the Brian Solomon example that his G2 holonomy space with the topology R3 bundle over S4. Now, when we turn on the flux, this transfer space to Minkowski 1 gets deformed. It's not just warped like it was for M2 brain by some harmonic function. It's really deformed, and one can find supersymmetric solutions in this context by supporting the four-form flux, again, in terms of building blocks of the original G2 holonomy space. And one gets the explicit solution in this context. So this is a solution that is now deformation of the original G2 holonomy space, where this deformation is parameterized by a single constant C. If I take this C constant to 0, that would turn off the flux. This type of warp factor, H, disappears, and all we end up is the original G2 holonomy metric. But now turning on this flux with non-zero C, we get an explicit solution of that type. Now, how does this solution behave? Per se, it has a property that far away in the asymptotic, at large radial coordinate, this warp factors and the flux fall off very fast. They fall off so fast that actually I don't have any conserved charge associated with this configuration, nor mass. So basically, we dub these configurations, we call them three brains, because we had the word volume associated with Minkowski space, four-dimensional Minkowski space, but there was no brain. Asymptotically, there was no conserved charge. Nevertheless, it's a valid solution. It has this property by solving the actual original equations of motion. Now, what was interesting in this context is, as we go into interior toward R equal L, the solution becomes singular. And it's singular in a very particular way. Namely, the transfer space starts behaving like that, with a new radial coordinate going to 0, four sphere disappearing, and the rest of the space being being, you know, three-dimensional space that is locally R3. So that's very sort of intriguing, because it's telling us, one could describe even with the supergravity solution a possibility of having some co-dimension four singularity appearing now. that could model something that we would like to identify with cage degrees of freedom. All speculation, but we want to understand that further. Okay? How this could be related now to gauge degrees of freedom of now leftover four-dimensional theory. And so what's also interesting to explore all these properties of co-dimension, lower co-dimension singularities in this context, also for other type of G2 holonomy spaces, which would be of interest. But mainly for this talk, this is just a motivation to go to the second part of my talk, to address the gauge degrees of freedom in the context of M theory and to study Hitchin type systems. Okay. Any questions? That's how we would see them appearing. This fluctuation then in the leftover part would appear as gauge bosons, massless gauge bosons of non-abelian gauge symmetries. But this is really more the topic how we address these issues in the context of what I'm calling Hitchin system. Okay? All right, so this is how am I doing time-wise? Not so good, well, right? Okay, so let's go now, thank you, to the second part of trying to deal now with another way of looking, of addressing properties of non-abelian gauge degrees of freedom in the M-theory context, which is typically addressed by looking at M-theory on G2 backgrounds, where there is a co-dimension AD type singularity realized inside the G2 background on manifold of dimension 3. Now, that type of gauge degrees of freedom on this 3 manifold within G2 holonomy space are described as so-called topological twist of a 6 brain that wraps this 3 manifold. And they are dictated by the supersymmetric gauge theory associated with this 6 brain, namely effective 7 dimensionals, super Young-Mills theory, where 4 dimensions are our world, and the rest of degrees are living now on this co-dimension 4 singularity 3 manifold. Now, those degrees of freedom are specified by a joint valued one form field. This is the so-called Higgs field that parameterizes, its value parameterizes normal deformations to the local geometry transverse to the 3 manifold embedded in G2, and the one form gauge field that also deals with us then in 4 dimensions with the gauge degrees of freedom. Now, this system was formulated in that particular way by Pantev and Weinhold, and they also address the properties of the system when they allow this Higgs field to vanish at various locations on M3 manifold, corresponding now effectively to co-dimension 7 singularities. All in the local context. In a recent work by Sakura and collaborators, this analysis has been extensively advanced, developed in more details, and in addition, what they focus is on the observation of co-dimension 6 singularities in this context, which would parameterize not chiral matter, but non-chiral matter. Another intriguing development in their work is the appealing features that we could possibly connect the approach via this Hitchin system on M3 manifold to embed it into building compact G2 manifolds via twisted connected sums. And luckily, Sakura explained a lot of those things that I said in words, in much more detail. Also, Rodrigo had more math things to say about the system introduced by Panthev and Weinhold. Now, with these words, what I want to focus on is go beyond these approaches. And observers that, in particular, in this context, both the Higgs field and the gauge field were taken to have diagonal value in the adjoint representation of the gauge symmetry. So this is, of course, the first starting point, the important thing to actually start connecting the moduli space of G2 manifolds and actually embedding of this co-dimension 4 manifold into the G2 space, as well as identifying properly the non-abelian gauge bosons. But what we want to do that, as advertised already, is to go beyond that, beyond diagonal commuting value forms for the Higgs field, and also turning on now the background of non-zero gauge fields as well. So I'll say again in words the key steps in our approach, and then turn later on to some further details. So basically, I would say, if you decouple, just listen to the summary first. So what we are going to do is we'll take components of the Higgs field to be such that they are not built out of commuting matrices. And we'll also turn on the gauge field. And again, we'll refer to this new type of configurations as T-brain type configuration, because they sort of fit in a broader scheme of T-brain-like phenomena introduced, for example, in the context of F theory first. In some way, by addressing this gauge theory on the three manifold, we are turning on degrees of freedom that are invisible to G2 geometry. And also, when we have a flux turned on, somehow these degrees of freedom characterize on this three manifold some limiting behavior of this four-form flux as well. So we are going in a regime where geometry is not enough, and we are extracting new properties from turning on non-trivial components in the Higgs field and background gauge fields. Okay. So the local model that we are going to take was actually motivated from the one pointed out by Sakura and collaborators. We would take a three-manifold that will describe as a Riemann surface over an interval. So the Riemann surface itself, if you view them embedded into the forum Calabi-Yau threefold, okay, will be viewed, this gauge theory on this Riemann surface would be viewed as a mild deformation of a Hitchy system associated with the complex curve fitting in the corresponding Calabi-Yau threefold. So, to this, describing that as a Hitchin system of this, which I already said in words, as a local Calabi-Yau threefold geometry, okay, and now fibering that over an interval, we can view this construction as a local deformation of TCS-like construction of a local G2 background. So we are modeling the bulk geometry by taking the three-dimensional surface in this particular wave as a Riemann surface sitting in this local Calabi-Yau and fibered over an interval, just like the construction of G2 bulk backgrounds in TCS-like construction. So it's a very special way of choosing this M3 in this context.
That's in the neck of the TCS construction?
No, it's in the middle. I'm not worrying about connecting that globally. I'm just, as a local thing, I'm viewing that as Riemann curve fibered over an interval. And viewing this Riemann curve as part of now deformed, embedded into bulk of deformed collabial. And so this vibration then locally describes now, over an interval, locally describes now embedding into such local G2. Now you're asking about global things. Don't have answer to that. Just motivated by the way, you know, one would like to find global G2 embedding via TCS. Okay? Now, for this particular choice of the M3 manifold, we turn on non-trivial Higgs and gauge field, as I kept emphasizing. And what we are able to find is to study resulting localized matter obtained from this generalized T-type, T-brain type construction. Okay. And this motivation, as again said, in terms of this T-brain, follows, is motivated very closely by studying of zero modes in T-brain context of FDLE. All right, so those are words. Now let's go to a few key building blocks and then to concrete example. So, as I said, I was quite lucky. Both Sakura and also Rodrigo gave talks from different perspectives on Hitchin type systems in G2 backgrounds. So I'm going to emphasize that actually both the associative tree forum of G2 background and the tree forum flux potential, namely its field strength, its four forum field strength of M theory, when reduced along the singular two-dimensional four fiber, where now this three-dimensional gauge theory lives, namely on M3, allow us to decompose it precisely in terms of decomposition of harmonic 1,1 form on this local AD singularity, both for associative three form and the three form flux, in terms of one form gauge forms, which are gauge potentials. Oops. Is that correct? I'm probably flipping.
Yeah.
I'm flipping. Apologies. Okay. So draft is still rough. I'm flipping this. So actually, this is where Higgs field should be, and this is where the gauge field should be. So those are corresponding decomposition then produces for us one forum Higgs field and gauge field of the three manifold M3. And they are in the joint representation of the 3D gauge theory living on this M3. Okay. Both this gauge potential and the Higgs field can combine into what we would call complexified connection. And we can form out of it the field strength and an analogous non-holomorphic type structure with the complex conjugate of this complexified connection. Now the Hitchin system tells us what equations this one forms have to satisfy. And they reduce, basically, in the language of four-dimensional field theory, what is resulting one as D-flatness and F-flatness conditions on this complexified connection. So what we refer to as F-flatness condition tells us that this connection has to be flat. Its field strength has to be zero. And the other two forum has to also satisfy a specific condition, which is related to what we call the flatness condition. So those are fields that live in the adjoint representation of a gauge group. And actually, this D-flatness and F-flatness conditions have to be satisfied modulo some unitary gauge transformations. Well, more concretely, let's write these equations explicitly on a M3 manifold that, as I said, I'm going to specifically write as a Riemann surface over an interval. So those are Riemann surface coordinates, and that is the interval coordinate. And in principle, I can write the general metric on which the specific three-dimensional manifold, metric of this specific three-dimensional manifold. And as a consequence, now I can decompose my complexified connection into the parts that live on the Riemann surface, components that live on the Riemann surface, that satisfy this set of equations. Now, this set of equations basically governing components that pretty much live on this complex curve, okay, are viewed as deformed Hitchin system. Namely, they are deformed in a way from the standard Hitchin system of a Riemann surface in Calabi-Yau threefold. So that's analogous study of gauge degrees of freedom within Calabi-Yau threefolds, as originally developed by those three people. So if I forget this part, namely dependence of the Higgs field, it's a T component on interval coordinates. This would be exactly the same as a Hitchin system on exact Calabi-Yau threefold. And this would be the field that would parameterize moduli transfers to this Riemann surface within Calabi-Yau threefold. Now we are not in Calabi-Yau threefold. We don't have only a Riemann surface. It's fibered over the interval, and we get deformation. But that's not those are not all the equations that govern the Hitchin system. There is also equation now that governs the flow along this interval of the of these components of complexified gauge potential. So this complexified gauge potential that lives, whose component live in the curve, actually can now be T-dependent, consequence of vibration. And this is this last equation, right, we could refer to as the flow of a complexified connection on the Riemann surface, the way it's related to the rest of the components, and its dependence on the interval T. Right. And this is again coming to this is motivation, basically the way we see these fields, the way the equations that they govern, that by which they are governed, we can interpret now this equation as a flow equation for A sigma, okay, and it's a gluing construction to local Calabi-Yau threefold over an interval. That's where this thing. Maybe I spend a lot of time on that, but sort of motivating it that we are after something that, okay, could have embedding into TCS. Anyway, now let's go after background solutions, okay, and now I'm going to address that only in a local patch of this Riemann curve over a local part of an interval. So I'm not doing the finite interval in this context. It's really only local, right? And I'm going to use the fact that a flatness condition basically tells us that in this particular patch, the complexified connection can be built out of elements that take value in complexified gauge group G sub C. But the D flatness conditions are involved and would be some complicated function that would further fix this gauge group elements the way they are valued in the complexified gauge group. Now, if we think that we are going to build this gauge connection from starting with the gauge connection that is close to identity, right? Namely, taking now infinitesimal group elements, where h now lies in the algebra-valued functions, then this complexified connection would just take this simple form in this infinitesimal limit, okay? And then if you turn now to D-flatness condition, what one obtains in this context, that D-flatness conditions actually make this imaginary part of H to be the algebra-valued harmonic map. So that is only infinitesimal case. Our cases do not fall into this class. Our cases, this example that we have falls into this class that is associated with some large gauge transformation, okay? So what we do now with our approach to get concrete example, we start with the local patch, as I emphasized, and introduce now for the Riemann curve, holomorphic and anti-holomorphic coordinates, Z and Z bar, and make this ansatz in terms of group valued elements for the complexified connection in that particular form of complexity of holomorphic and anti-holomorphic coordinates on the Riemann curve sigma. And then with this ansatz, with the properties of A's to be that automatically satisfying F-flatness, we put that into the term condition and hope that the ansatz that we took will solve the D-term conditions, okay? And we actually got one example with analytic result that I'm gonna highlight at the end of my talk. But we also approach it perturbatively by obtaining solutions as power series in t-coordinates and then we sum them. But since you question the convergence of that stuff, I'd rather just use group theory and show you explicit result for which I don't have to do perturbative summation. In any case, now how about localized modes in this non-trivial backgrounds that I'm talking about? So we take a background, non-trivial backgrounds with non-commuting phi and non-zero gauge field, okay? And this background will take value in the subalgebra of G sub C, and then the corresponding commutant we can also obtain if this is the maximal one. And decompose the adjoint valued complexified connection in terms of representation under the subalgebra K sub C and the commutant part. So having this background now and knowing how it decomposes, we now turn on for the full complexified connection, the background, and what we call zero modes. So this extra fields now will be the ones that I will identify with zero modes and see if I could find solutions for those zero modes that are localized in codimension 7 now, or localized as point in this three-dimensional manifold. Okay. So there are, of course, differential and algebraic methods by which one could study how many such modes we have or so, but we really took a direct route first. We took a particular background and expand around this background in terms of zero modes and look at linearized Hutching-type system. So the previous system now in terms of this expansion, linearized in phi, psi, zero mode, reduces to that form. And now we proceed and try to solve this for the values of the zero modes, okay? Now this is a mess. Those are couple second order differential equations, okay? But we wanted to see in concrete local patch whether we can really realize with particular background the modes that are now localized. And finally, I'm leading toward the last part where I'm gonna show you an example of that type, okay? We are also working on developing detailed differential and algebraic geometry approach to really count those modes on general terms. But as physicists, I'll show you a concrete example. Okay? So I'm going to take a concrete example when the background will take value in, and its commutant will be of the form SU2 cross U1 with the original adjoint valued fields in SU3. As a special example. Actually, this breaking it down into, you know, SU2 part and embedding into any other possible gauge group will give us the same result in this context. But let me go for this special case, all right, and make the ansatz. So the ansatz that I'm making now, those are SU3 valued adjoint one-form fields. And I'm making the ansatz for them in terms of one-forms that live here in SU2. And then there is also the Cartan, the second Cartan of SU3 representation. This configuration for one-form field is non-diagonal. Okay? By dh, what I mean is a specific function of z, z bar, and t with this local patch coordinates, okay, for which I'm going to find equations satisfying the flatness condition. For the one-form gauge potential, I'm taking this simple diagonal ansatz, but it's non-zero. So what is unknown here are functions f and function h in this context. Okay? This ansatz is motivated to look for localized zero modes encoded in the structures of this unknown function f that we are writing. And with the goal is hoping that with this particular ansatz, I'm going to solve the flatness condition, find f and h, and then look for zero modes. Okay? And hopefully check that those zero modes are, would be localized at z equals z bar equals zero at a point in Riemann surface, and then check if they are also localized in the t direction. All right? So those are the flatness conditions for this ansatz. So as I advertised, those are second order equations. But there is a concrete solution that I can find. H is not as general in terms of z and z bar, depends only on the combination of z and z bar, and it depends on t. K is integration constant that we choose. It's a particular solution of this equation that I'm choosing. Okay? And this f that I want to identify with some localization in at z equals z bar, zero, turns out to be this concrete solution. Okay, so this is the background. It solves f by construction and d term by solving these equations. Okay, now let's look at the zero modes. Okay? I'm making the ansatz for the zero modes to be localized at t equals zero. And then those are unknown functions of z and z bar. I'm going to find now these unknown functions in power series of this parameter k, kappa. So one can do this. It's not rocket science or even algebraic geometry. And one gets the explicit solution to, in the leading order. In kappa expansion. So what is a neat thing about this concrete answer is that this is the zero mode whose representation is doublet with charge 1 under the resulting a background and the complement, and it's localized. It's localized in T with the ansatz, and now we are solving the rest in the expansion, actually in this F. We are solving that in the power series in kappa, and this is the answer. So this solution per se is also localized at z equals 0, z equals 0 bar, z equals 0, bar equals 0. So it's localized and corresponds to square normalizable mode. And as I keep emphasizing, it's a mode that is localized at T0 and Z0. And this is now the mode that I'm going to identify in four-dimensional theory as a chiral field. And it comes from the Hitchin system where the information of the geometry of the bulk G2 is not there. It's in the direction of non-trivial Higgs field and the gauge field background that we found. Just to tell you, because this is rather fresh answer, we had a very hard time finding the solutions because the answers for the backgrounds that we were making were not good enough. We had to have some mismatch in terms of which generators are turned on for this background. And there's a mismatch. You see, this is the second Cartan that's turned on here, and that's the first Cartan of SU3 that's turned on. And those are the typical, what we call T-brain of the hexagonal term that we need for this conference. So it's both this stuff being misaligned carefully with this background and this background being non-commuting. So those were the two ingredients that at the end allowed us to get this particular localized solution, at least in perturbation in powers of kappa. Okay. So this sort of, I believe, opens the direction of studying that in more concrete cases for other examples, but also at the same time, we are developing both, you know, the algebraic and differential approaches. Some of it spelled out in Sakura's lecture already to identify how many localized modes we have in concrete case. Because, you know, as mathematicians, you may not be interested in this profile, but you just want to know how many of them we have, right? So that may be sufficient powerful technique there that we are aiming at and hopefully will appear in this paper about to come. So let me summarize. So I made a party line of this talk to discuss M theory on special holonomy spaces when we add fluxes to it. Okay. And I highlight some of the older work, but also some puzzling features when we go to the supergravity limit and observing, for example, configurations with the word volume of four-dimensional Minkowski space that with turn-on fluxes give us co-dimension four singularities in this context. And it's worth studying that further and hopefully maybe connecting it to the Hitchin type ideas, maybe with less supersymmetry. Now, directly dealing with gauge degrees of freedom in M theory with N equal 1 supersymmetry, we were developing the Hitchin type system where we included flux and non-commuting Higgs fields and construct explicit T-brain type configurations. The way we chose the three-dimensional space as a Riemann curve fibered over an interval naturally fits into describing the Riemann curve to fit into Calabi-Yau part, the formation of Calabi-Yau, three-folds fibered over an interval. And so this this vibration in the Hitchin system is captured by a gradient flow that I highlight over this interval for the Higgs and gauge fields. Okay, and the last but not least, in this context, we found explicit examples with localized zero modes signifying appearance of chiral matter. Outlook. Well, I'd love to explore more this M3 brains and see how these properties, what kind of properties they have of the type of codimension, the topology of the manifolds on this codimension for singularities in this context. And I believe this may have to do something with things related to less than n equal 1 supersymmetry. But the second part is dealing with gauge degrees of freedom via Hitchin system. So what we saw is that the way we describe this 3D gauge theory on this three manifold is by viewing it as 2D gauge theory over an interval that produced naturally then the Higgs fields naturally produce the moduli space matching the transfer direction, the G2 background. Okay. So there is a natural thing to propose to take this 3D gauge theories and fiber them over another interval. In this way, we would be producing Hitching type system living on four-dimensional manifold associated with codimension four in eight-dimensional spaces of special holonomy, like local spin seven backgrounds. So this could give us at least a way of addressing potential features of gauge theories, non-abelian gauge theories, in three dimensions by identifying this particular vibration of curve over interval, which fits into G2, and now another, this fibering over another curve that fits into local spin 7 structure, and that could potentially give us some new ideas about constructions also of spin 7 manifolds and also features of gauge theories from M theory in three space-time dimensions. Okay, so also this feature of this vibration over vibration gives us an interesting interpretation of this three-dimensional space-time n equal one backgrounds, okay, as n equal one domain walls in one dimension higher, which was this original Hitchin system. So this is there are all kinds of interesting ideas that we also plan to develop and push these ideas to spin seven manifolds. Okay. And of course, this is the goal of this collaboration too, and so is mine. The ultimate goal is to have really explicit embedding of these geometries into globally defined G2 backgrounds with chiral matter. Thank you.
Just from superficial point of view, I just wonder whether this kind of chiral matter stuff, is it kind of any relationship with a modification which Gukov was talking about?
I thought he was more interested in topological defects in ordinary space strings, and that's the part that I heard of his talk. I'm keeping lower dimensional space plane Minkowski. I don't think it's directly related to what he's interested in. But those are some important questions in strongly coupled conformal field theories, big subject in formal theory.
Yeah, so I just wanted to ask how much you connected to these TCS. So I guess your proposal, the idea would be to construct even in such three cycles, which are sigma phi bit of interval, for example, P1 phi bit of an interval, chiral matter, despite it geometrically, you might not have codimension seven singularities. Is this the idea?
In some sense, yes. In some sense, we do not see codimension seven singularity in this particular local background. I think we see codimension five, right? But anyway, it's not.
Six.
It's really
It'll
the fluxes and this null degrees of freedom of T brains that cause this localized mode, which are not seen in geometry.
So can you turn off the flux and interpolate to models which are sort of standard solutions of the type that I was discussing?
Yeah, I can turn off some of this, but it would be.
So in the better study case of T-brains and Calabi-Yau threefolds, there's usually a deformation you can switch on to turn it back into something which is diagonalizable. It's not totally clear whether that deformation modulus is is actually present in these models because you have only n equals 1 supersymmetry. So in the Calavia threefold case, we were exploiting having n equals 2 supersymmetry. And so there's no obstructions in the moduli space. Here, it's not so clear. So from our perspective, we're kind of excited about, or we are excited about it, because you can get something that would look geometrically like a codimension 6 singularity. And as I understand it, that's easier to come, well, not easy, but comparatively easier to build. And you would still have the property of having localized matter. So you could still do some interesting particle physics type stuff without without necessarily building pure codimension 7. So.
This is really a local patch only. This is really a local patch. We are not,
I think,
right. No, we have not done that. But also specifically to what Jonathan has said, you know, this example is special. It doesn't, you know, this A does not depend as into some arbitrary way of Z and Z bar. It's only function of a real part of Z. So it can be viewed as codimension 5 singularity in that context. Yeah. Well, what can we say, right? Yeah.
Thank you. So in your models, you have flux, or you should think about this T-brain background as having to do with the flux in M-theory. But doesn't the M-theory G-flux for a G2 manifold backreact on the geometry and then kills your holonomy, or kills you with the holonomy, and you don't have a G2 structure manifold? So then you would think that these are the kind of geometries you would reconstruct.
Yes, that's a very good point. We believe that, you know, in the bulk, we may not have any flux. It's only really realized here as a limiting case.
I see.
Yeah, so this is how we believe that, you know, that because those are inherently non-abelian ones. So, all this other stuff.
I
don't want to say that it's not necessarily, you know, this M3 brain, I'm not saying I'm harping on this other, with this other hat on that. There I have less supersymmetry. And the transfer space is deformed, G2 holonomy space. And so I'm dealing there with something. But here I'm sticking to strictly n equal 1. So in the bulk, I cannot induce this flux is very non-abelian in some way. So it's not seen by the supergravity limit, which is really mainly just abelian. Exactly. That's the point. But we worried precisely about that point as well.
Well, I mean, it is seen, the non-abelian is actually seen because it comes out as, you know, it's even seen in the K3 case because, you know, the moduli space of hypercalor metrics on an ADE singularity is described by non-abelian gauge theory by the Kronheimer construction. And these are mm-hmm. These are the non-abelian moment maps.
They are ADE type, yes, indeed. But that's a supergravity limit, you know. And
they're there in the supergravity limit. It's just the solution, the moduli space of solutions to Einstein's equations, just the Ricci-Flatt equations, are described by a non-abelian gauge theory. Mm-hmm. That's what Kronheimer showed.
Right. Well, we believe we don't have, at least we think that this flux, if it's real, it's not, we don't know how it's realized in the bulk, if at all.
It's, they're just metric deformations in the phi.
I'm talking the flux gauge field, A. That's where the three-form flux decomposes on the...
But your A is abelian.
Yeah, it is, well...
Traceless,
you know. It's T3 part of SE2, so, yeah. Right now, you know, we may be able to go beyond that, but right now, yes.
No, it is a bit, I mean, it's just, you know, that it's traceless, but it's coming from the two cycles, you know, associated to SU3.
Well, yeah, but you're in a very singular limit. I mean, I don't... You want to have a massless U1 to talk about. And I mean, you want to have, in fact, a massless SU3. So, I mean, I should say that a very similar phenomenon happens in the case of F3 and Calabia threefolds, where you also have the same sort of phenomenon. And there, again, there's no flux switched on in the bulk geometry. But in terms of the localized degrees of freedom, there's extra stuff which is trapped. Mm-hmm. So it's very much in the same vein as that sort of thing. So.
But I agree, we should investigate that in more details, really, what, you know, how, if at all, you know, in the non-abelian context, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, we have, let's thank Miriam again, and. Then we're supposed to restart at 3 o'clock, but there's a coffee break now.